Welcome, everyone, to Open Air, KLW's radio magazine for the performing arts in San Francisco. Today, we'll hear about the gender-reversed production of the musical Sister Act at Theater Rhinoceros. We'll also have details about the 2019 San Francisco International Arts Festival from Executive Director Andrew Wood. Live music you're hearing performed now by members of the Real Vocal String Quartet, along with guest cellist Marta Roma. And Peter Robinson offers suggestions for your summer reading. This is Open Air. Welcome. Members of the Real Vocal String Quartet, welcome back to KALW, everyone. There's a show coming up at the Yerba Buena Center featuring the Real Vocal String Quartet and featuring music of countries around the world that are sister cities to San Francisco. Irene Sazer, who I've known the longest with the Real Vocal String Quartet. Do I have that accurate?
Yes, you do.
Excellent. Yerba Buena Center, downtown San Francisco. And what is the name of the show?
The name of the show is Culturekin, and that's the name of our new CD as well.
Excellent. Would I would like to impose on you to play a piece for us.
That would not be an imposition. We'd be happy to. And I'd like to very excitedly say, aside from me and Sumaya Jackson, Sam Shuen, and David Tangney, we're the members of Real Vocal String Quartet, but we have in studio with us one of our sister city collaborators from Barcelona, Spain, Marta Roma, on cello. And she wrote this piece along with Sumaya Jackson. It's called Aurora.
The Real Vocal String Quartet live here in the KLW studio. They're giving a show on Saturday, the 25th at 8 p.m. at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts Forum. This is in celebration of the new CD called Culture Kin. The name of the show is Culture Kin, and it's new music with international artists from San Francisco's sister cities. By way of introduction of the Real Vocal String Quartet, my favorite story, and forgive me if you've heard this a million times already. My sweetheart and I were taking a walk down Telegraph Avenue near where we live, and we wandered into a used bookstore, and I thought I knew every used bookstore on Telegraph Avenue in Berkeley and Oakland, but sure enough, this was a new one, and we were loving what we were finding on the shelves. And then the proprietor there said, "You want to stick around? We're going to have live music here." And I said, "Sure." And sure enough, it was the Real Vocal String Quartet, Irene Sazer. An honor and a privilege to.
And the rest is history.
And the rest is history. What is RVSQ in one word? What is the Real Vocal String Quartet in one word?
The main mission is that we play music we love. Another one of our missions is, it's not one word, I'm sorry, is that,
I lost count anyway.
Is that we make our own music. We either do covers of things that we just love from any genre, any parts of our lives. But this album is, I think this might be our second album where everything is absolutely originally written. And this one, of course, is so exciting because we're continuing cultural ambassador work that we were able to do through the U.S. Department of State, and we're working with all these international artists. So
that's wonderful. You were able to work with the Department of State, and they didn't mess with you or anything?
We went on an incredible program, five countries in Eastern Europe in 2012.
During friendlier times.
Yeah, it was during friendlier times. Yeah. Yeah.
How many sister cities does San Francisco have?
19.
Wow.
And so we had to choose.
Wow. What, you had to narrow it down to how many?
We narrowed it down to 8, and then a couple things turned into bigger projects. Like there's a project with a Jordanian filmmaker that I'm going to do beyond this grant, and that we got a grant for this project. So I think it might be 6 sister cities represented on Saturday night.
Can you tell me what the cities are?
Okay, I can try. I always forget. Seoul, South Korea, Barcelona, Spain. I should have said that first because Marta's here. We have an artist, Seiko Tachibana from Osaka, Japan, and Su Yan Lu plays a traditional Korean violin from Seoul. We have a Sicilian playing the Hong drum, and it's the Hong drum that's from the sister city, which is Zurich, Switzerland. It was invented near there. Help me out, you guys. What else? Côte d'Ivoire.
Oh, Côte d'Ivoire.
Feli Chaco. Mm. In Côte d'Ivoire, she wrote a piece with Sam Shuhan and
Cork Ireland.
Yeah. Martine de Cogain. Do I say it right? I don't know. Yeah.
You just say it in as phony an Irish accent as you want.
Martine!
The event is taking place. It's 8 o'clock on Saturday at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts Forum. The website that I'm looking at is rvsq.com. It's the website for the Real Vocal String Quartet, who will be performing along with many of the musicians just mentioned as part of this event called Culture Kin, and the release of their CD as well. And I love that Real Vocal String Quartet, even though you're using the instruments of Mozart and Schubert, that you play all kinds of music, and mm-hmm. you're not afraid to call a violin what most classical people would call a violin. You wouldn't be afraid to call it a fiddle either.
Not at all afraid.
Nothing blasphemous about that.
We love to stretch the boundaries and see what we can do, and we think we can do everything.
I think you can too, and I love the fact. Weren't you telling me once that you were trying to do a string quartet situation and introduce vocals to it, and you hit some resistance to that?
Well, my first group was incredible, Turtle Island String Quartet. I mean, mm-hmm. that was an amazing career launcher for me. So I will not only always be grateful for that, but I'm still in awe of all those guys who have played over the years in Turtle Island. But yeah, they weren't so into singing. Mm-hmm. That idea got nixed. So.
Oh, okay. So all the more reason to create the Real Vocal String Quartet.
Exactly.
This is CD number 3 now?
4.
Baby number 4. May I ask you to launch into another song?
Yeah, we have one more piece we can do for you today that I wrote, but I wrote in mind with our Korean violin player. So if you hear, you won't hear her today in the studio, but she's on our CD, and it's called Seasons Song.
Vocal String Quartet live here in the KLW studio. The event is at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts Forum. It is taking place this Saturday, the 25th at 8 p.m. This is in celebration of the release of the new CD called Culture Kin, and the show is a program of new music with international artists from San Francisco's sister cities. Irene, would you please reintroduce the members of the quartet and plus your special guest as well.
Yes, I'm Irene Sazer, and Sumaya Jackson is on five-string fiddle. Sam Shuhan is on the big bass over there. Mm-hmm. David Tangney is on cello, and Marta Roma from Barcelona is on cello as well.
Irene, thank you so much
for bringing
the
Kevin.
Gang in here. We'll have you back in one form
we'll
or another.
We'll always come.
We love you guys, and... how many? We're authorized to give out two pairs of tickets?
Let's give out two pairs of tickets.
The first two people who call us at area code 415-841-5500 4134. We'll give you a pair of tickets to see the Saturday performance at 8 p.m. at the Yerba Buena Center of the Real Vocal String Quartet. Good luck to you. We're listening to Jessica Laurel. She is performing tonight as part of the San Francisco International Arts Festival, a song called War Love. I'm happy to bring to the KALW microphones Atta Wong Chun Tat as well as Andrew Wood, who's the executive director of the San Francisco International Arts Festival. So Tell me about Jessica here. I'm loving watching this video, but of course that doesn't translate on the radio. But what a dancer! What a singer! Tell me more about her.
Jessica Laurel is she's a graduate of Stanford. She's originally from Chicago, and she's been singing since she was a small girl in choirs and there's a lot of church influence in her performances. But she's got a lot of soul. She's got a lot of heart. She's a brilliant concert that she gives, and they're recording it live tonight. So we're very excited about that. It's going to be a film project as well. So then it's from her latest album, War Love, as you said.
Where's the show tonight?
It's at Gallery 308 at the Fort Mason Center for Arts and Culture. All of our performances are there. They're our partners. So we have half a dozen venues at Fort Mason that the festival takes place at.
Oh, I love a festival that takes over the whole city.
Well, we're starting small with, you know, we're taking over one campus first, and then we'll grow from there.
The name or the theme of the San Francisco International Arts Festival is The Path to Democracy. I would love to hear the story of how you came to that.
It's the third since the current occupant of the White House became the current occupant of the White House, and we've had in 2017 our theme was around protest. Last year it was around organizing, and this year it's about our own ideas for democracy and what democracy is doing in other parts of the world and how democracy has played in different arenas and in different societies. And with Atta, with coming out from Hong Kong and the Orphan of Zhao, that's an expression of what's going on in China or in Hong Kong at the present time. So there's a number of different artists who are traveling from around the world with pieces, with the performances that reflect what has gone on or what is going on in their parts of the world, as well as some of the local artists as well.
Have you had problems bringing artists in?
This is the worst year it has ever been.
Really?
This is absolutely the worst year. And we didn't get two artists this year. So one company coming from Canada, of all places, would you believe? And then the other.
Oh,
was,
I understand they're dangerous.
Yes,
there.
That's right. Yeah,
dangerous,
yeah.
Socialists, Democrats too.
And another company coming from Syria. And what was very tragic about the Syrians is we knew it was going to be very difficult, but their petition was the first one to be approved. Mm. And then what the Americans did was they let them go to the consulate and then so they could humiliate them in person rather than sort of sending a form saying you can't come. Because we had got lots of different letters of support and all these other documents saying why they should be allowed, and we were fully expected to fight for them at the petition stage. In the end, they were the only ones that were not asked for more evidence. They just sailed straight through. So we thought, because they're giving us a hard time over everybody else, so they're letting the Syrians in, but then they turn around and stop them. So it was very sad, because they had a piece that was about what happened after the Arab Spring and Syrian refugees.
What kind of piece was it?
It was a theater piece. It was Muda al-Haghi is the name of the playwright. He's one of the next generation of great Arab playwrights, and it was going to be their U.S. debut. But we're very sorry. We're very sad about it. But it's taken 2 years for the conduct at the White House to sort of percolate down to the operational level at USCIS, and so they kind of operate differently than they used to. So, but we go on. We have another 48 companies, so we're very sorry about the two that can't make it. But you know, we have to roll on.
There will always be next year.
There is always next year.
And some petitions have been successful in getting some people through.
But. Well, yeah, I mean, what our attorney is telling us now is that we have to do premium processing on everybody, which actually quadruples the price.
Oh, for heaven's sake!
So, if you apply for a petition is $460. If you want them to do it quickly, it's an extra $1,400. So, when they ask for evidence, it just slows everything down. And so, some of them have been in the system for 4 or 5 months. And so unless you can start asking for the permits or the application a year out, we're just being told premium processing.
Would you have to raise the ticket prices for the events because of this, because of all the extra legal costs?
We don't know what we're going to do yet. I mean, we have to think about it. Our legal counsel has told us that you have to do this, so we have to sort of figure out where that money is coming from. Or what we're going to do. But that's a question for next year.
Andrew Wood, he is the executive director of the San Francisco International Arts Festival. The event is beginning tonight.
That's right.
Many, many events, including the music of Jessica.
Miss Jessica Larell.
I want to welcome...
My name is Atta.
Atta
Wong.
I'm merely forgetting how to read. No. That's my problem.
I forgot
how to read the English language. Hello, Atta. Tell me about your work.
Actually, first I have to say thank you to Andrew because he spent wonderful time and all the arrangement to bring us from Hong Kong to here in San Francisco. And the work is The Orphan of Zhao. Actually, it's the real history from the spring and autumn Warren dynasty in this period. So the play is about there is a king, and beside the king there's two officers. One is good, one is bad. And the bad officer trying to kill the whole family of the good officer. And at that moment, there's this one princess from the good family, and she's trying to save the baby of Zhao. So there's two friends from this family. They're trying to help to save the baby of Zhao. And one of the friends called Qing Ying. And in the real history, he's the hero. He killed his own son to save the baby of Zhao. This is the more popular version of this story. But actually, this is not the real history. Mm-hmm. From in the real history, which wrote by a man who called Sima Qian, and he's the like history writer from the from long time ago, from the old period. And he tried to say, actually, he just took the baby from the neighborhood and to save the baby of Zhao. Actually, he's not the hero. But in whole China, everyone just know about the popular version. He's adapted by a playwright. But this is not the real history, real story. And then I try to bring the real history to show it up. Okay, actually, it's not the truth. So that's why I bring this not dramatic one, but the real history. I try to put the real history out to the theater. So now it's like we have been touring for 5 years in China and in, yeah, the whole China. Yeah, we've been touring, yeah.
The name I have here for the show is Lorp Helen. What am
it's,
I saying that
actually
right?
Actually, it's Lofen. Lofen.
Lofen.
Lofen.
Oh, I see. It's all one word. Okay, yeah, yeah. There was a little picture here in, between the letters. I thought it was two words here. As I say, I don't know how to read the English language. Barely speak it. 2.0.
No.
This event is taking place on Friday the 24th at the Cowell Theater, and then Sunday the 26th at the Herbst Pavilion as well. And those are the only two performances?
Yeah, we only have two performances.
Okay. Yeah. And this is all part of the San Francisco International Arts Festival. Atta Wong Chun Tat telling us about that event, as well as Andrew Wood, the executive director of the San Francisco International Arts Festival. What's the website if people want more information?
It's the abbreviation of our name, www.sfiaf.org.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. Really grateful. And how many years has this event been going?
The first one was in 2003, so we've been going for 17 years now.
Fantastic. Andrew, thank you so much. Atta, thank you for coming in. The San Francisco International Arts Festival beginning tonight. Go to the website sfiaf.org for more information.
Since receiving your call, can't see living without you. You've got me mind, soul, body, and all. Praying, I pray every night and each day, hoping that you'll drop a line. Praying, I pray till you sweep me away, straight to count number nine. You are simply too divine. Take me to to me.
I see you singing along to that. You probably know that song inside and out.
Hell
and everything
yeah.
else. AJ Mitchell and Brandon Noel Thomas, welcome to the KLW microphones.
Thank you.
Sister Act, the musical. I know it as the as the movie, and I missed the musical, but now I get to see the musical, and then a particularly interesting spin on this. I would love to hear about it.
Yes. Thank you for having us on.
You bet.
Yeah.
You bet.
So, yes, we are doing Sister Act, the musical at Theater Rhinoceros in San Francisco. And we have decided to place the musical back in San Francisco. The original film with Whoopi Goldberg is filmed in San Francisco, but when it moved to Broadway in London, they moved the location to Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. So in our production, we moved it back to San Francisco.
Good,
and,
good.
Yeah, absolutely. And brought in with it all the San Francisco vibes and stylings, including a gender explosive cast. We have cisgender folk, non-binary folk, transgender folk in the play, playing the roles that they are meant to play in this world, including who's sitting next to me in the studio, Brandon Noel Thomas, as our Dolores Van Cartier, who, of course, Whoopi Goldberg made famous in the early 1990s playing this role. And Brandon Noel Thomas comes in and takes it up another notch.
What do you do with the part?
It's more so just taking it and trying to put my spin on it, try and put my signature, if you will, on the role, because Whoopi made this iconic character that also Patina originated on Broadway, Cynthia Erivo in one of the runs in the UK. Like, these big names have done so much with this role. It's an iconic role that people know and people love from childhood, from anywhere, you know, in their life. It's a story that means something, that makes them jump out of their seat, and then when they think about it or see it. So I was like, this is a lot of weight on this role, that not only I have to uphold the history of it, but also put this new spin on it without making it a cliche or making it a shtick of like, oh, it's a man in a wig playing Whoopi Goldberg doing this. Like, no, this is Brandon Noel Thomas playing Dolores Van Cartier of Sister Act, you know? So it's more so putting that originality on it while keeping the originality of it all.
I'd love to hear how you came to that process, about how you made it yours.
Yeah, so when I first heard it, I sang everything in the original key of Patina Miller and Cynthia Erivo from the Broadway and West End versions. And so first I had to figure out what I was going to sing differently, because it's up there. It's a high requesting soundtrack. And so I was like, put a little of my nuances, which are very maybe a pop up to a high note that's past the note that's originated, or do a run down here, or bring it lower than it's supposed to go. Mm-hmm. Just showing the full versatility of the music and of myself that I'm used to doing. So that was the first part. And the second part was, how do we, as AJ and myself and as the cast, tell this story in a more queer fembody life in San Francisco, not only just being Dolores the showgirl singer. And so that's another layer that's a silent, we don't bring much attention to it, but it's like, it's the underlining of what I am thinking as I act as this character. There's always that, what would this be if I was, as I am, a fembody in San Francisco, be doing outside holding a hand with Eddie or something. It was like, is anybody saying this? Do I care that people see this in the time of the 70s? How is this affecting me, sort of thing, you know? And so I really had to think about it within my own time, and then of course, you know, collab with the people around me, trying to figure out what are ways that we can tap into that network while keeping it true and honest and not making it something to laugh at, but that's real.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, and the drive, right, as a director, is to make sure that the story is being told truthfully and not necessarily a caricature or one of the fun drag shows that San Francisco has to offer, mm-hmm. right? We go to drag shows all the time. We love them. It is a part of our community and life. But this show of Sister Act is not a drag show. It is a show about a femme black person in San Francisco navigating a space of wanting to have a career, wanting to have love, wanting to be seen as a part of a family, and the difficulties that might imbue as someone who is black and femme and living in the 70s, or even living currently within the San Francisco culture.
Does the story take place in the 70s? I assume, when did the movie come out? The movie came out,
I think, in the 90s.
92, 93. Mm-hmm.
And what part of San Francisco 92. Was it supposed to portray? I know it, but assuming nobody else knows. Was it Western Addition? Was it... What part of San Francisco?
It was all throughout San Francisco. A lot of Mission District references was kind of the core of it. But we saw bits and pieces. We saw a bit of the Castro. We saw a bit of Western Addition. We saw a bit of North Beach as well.
Okay.
So we went through the world of the play. But one of the kind of the richnesses of the show is that the nunnery is within it's walled off from the rest of the world. It doesn't see all of San Francisco. It only sees what happens within the wall of the convent, which is a dying population. There's members aren't coming to church anymore. There isn't knowledge about what's going on in Oakland or what's happening in Fresno even, right? They're just really focused on what is within these walls. And so, what's so beautiful about the show is that Dolores forces Mother Superior, who is kind of the matriarch of the church and is the staunch leader of the church, to see outside of the wall and really live a life that is a true sanctuary, right? Which is really inviting more than just like-minded folks into the building, but inviting, as she says in the song, a handful of Jews, people in transvestites at the time, because that was the language, but inviting transgender folks into the space, inviting folks with chaps on, inviting the queer folks, the gay boys, right? So it's all of that being invited into the sanctuary because Dolores comes there. So the church becomes an actual literal sanctuary as it is meant to be for everyone, right? Not just for the like-minded few that happen to come to church every Sunday.
Your job includes directing, choreographing, and this is all taking place at Theater Rhino. How did all this come together?
Yeah, so I've been working with Theater Rhinoceros for about 3 years now, collaborating with them on several projects. But primarily, I have spent my career and over the past 10 years trying to cultivate queer theater in every space I'm in. In San Francisco for the last 6 years, but before that in Louisiana, in North Carolina, in Detroit, in Missouri, and now in San Francisco. But John Fisher and I, who is the artistic director of Theater Rhinoceros, worked together most recently on Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, which had a lot of fun, brought in a lot of talent into that world, and I was choreographer only. And throughout the years, John and I have been collaborating in various ways, and when he decided that Sister Act will be on their season, he asked me to lead the helm as director and choreographer because he knows my passion for creating queer theater and creating theater that really represents the gender explosiveness of our current San Francisco and our current Bay Area and our current world, and not only our current world, but we've been that way forever. It's just now coming to the national zeitgeist in a deeper way. And so John asked me to be a part of the process, and so I started casting, and I started talking to my friends and saying, hey, I'm going to be doing this gender explosive sister act, and I'm really looking for the house to be cast with the folks I want to see in the world, the people I want to be in the world. And one of my first thoughts really was Brandon Noel Thomas, who has been on stages all throughout the Bay Area. I met them, I think, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, or so. And I always have seen them in roles, and I'm like, they're doing great in those roles, but there's something that they aren't able to explore about who they are as a person. And part of that is Brandon as a femme presenting body in spaces. And often I will see Brandon as playing these really masculine roles, right? Most recently saw them playing, the Fats Waller's role in Ain't Misbehavin', right? Mm-hmm. Amazing job, amazing work in those shows. And then I saw them in Hunchback of Notre Dame as well, which they were able to bring a little bit more of their queerness and a little bit more of their feminist to that role. But also wanted to see Brandon in their full, their full femme identity, right? And, and talked to Brandon. And Brandon at the time was living and had moved away from the Bay Area, mm-hmm. And was living in Las Vegas. And I was like, can you come back and do this for us and do this with us? And are you equity? And we'll figure it out. And then when Brandon said, I'll audition, and the producer says yes, then we start to build a cast around Brandon, which is full of some of my friends who I've been working with for the last 5 or 6 years, but also full of people who I don't know, who have just met, who are equally as equally wants to create this type of theater, ones that are queer, ones that are fun and bright and light and good, mm-hmm. you know, not just queer theater for queer theater's sakes, but queer theater that is actually moving and good and specific and nuanced, and not caricatures of the queer and femme identity, but truth of them. And I see so much truth in this show and in these people throughout our process. It's been really great.
The dates I have here are Thursday, May 23rd, Friday, May 24th, Saturday, May 25th, a matinee at 3 mm-hmm. o'clock, and then later on the same day, the Saturday, May 25th at 8 p.m., and then a show Tuesday, the 28th at 7 p.m. And are those the dates? Mm. And this is all at the Gateway Theater?
There's a few more for that second weekend. So the second weekend we do Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and a double Saturday, same times, 8 o'clock, and then that 3 o'clock matinee for that Saturday.
Mm-hmm. And it's a musical, and you've got a whole band and everything?
We do. We've been led by the great Tammy Hall, mm-hmm. who is a...
I know Tammy
yes,
Hall.
Yes, yes. She is an incredible jazz musician who is helping us tear up the Gateway mm-hmm. Theater every night.
Every yeah. night.
Sister Act, taking place at the Theater Rhinoceros. The website to go to is therhino.org. AJ, thank you.
Thank you.
Brandon, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Peter Robinson is here to tell us about books to read during the summer. Peter, good to see you again.
Hi, Kevin. Good to be here. And why don't we kick off with a little bit of George Benson, because it always gets me in the mood about talking about I Could Write a Book. Well, there you have it, and it is indeed books that we're going to be talking about. But I was smiling to myself at the beginning of the program, Kevin, when you mentioned being in a bookstore in Berkeley and actually finding you've gone for a book, but you actually heard a whole stack of music. And it makes me think that you never really know what happens to you when you go into a bookstore. In fact, I had an incident only last week, and I was with a group of students. They'd been studying political science, and they one of them had gone into the bookstore and he wanted a book, and he said, "Have you got Mills on Liberty?" And the attendant looked a little dazzled, but came back. She said, "No, we haven't got Mill on Liberty, but we have got Mill on the Floss. And I hoped that would help you." And I thought to myself, well, gee, political science has changed in the whole new direction nowadays. But I am kicking off with a first recommendation for summer reading. And it is by a person who in many ways is a political scientist. It's David Brooks. People know him from the NewsHour on PBS at 3 o'clock. He's one of the two Friday commentators along with Mark Shields. And his new book is called The Second Mountain, The Quest for a Moral Life. And this to me is an intriguing book because it embraces many different genres of reading. It's part memoir, it's part philosophy. It's certainly in many ways a book about civility and community and wanting to, as The Second Mountain is for him, a moment in life when he had to change his own thinking. Now, some people may call it a midlife crisis. He was 52 years old when he started writing this book. He had gone through a kind of quiet, unpublicized divorce, and he felt, in terms of his own career, that in many ways he'd reached the top of a pinnacle. He was on a major news show. He had a column in the New York Times. But that may have been all the achievements of the first mountain. So The Second Mountain is a book about reflection, about going within yourself, asking important questions about where you are in life and what indeed is out there for you. He comes up with a number of solutions, things which seem to work. It's, I think, in many ways beyond a self-help book. It's a book that really lays down a course to direct, a course to go in. So that's why I say it's a book partly of philosophy. And I think the philosophy, it raises the real question, the difference between independence and interdependence. And what he does is make a strong pitch for interdependence, for people being good neighbors, for people getting involved in their community, and above all, looking at a guideline as to how to live a meaningful life. So this is an unusual book because it does involve so much of his own personal life story. The title, The Second Mountain, as I explained, refers to that change in life when you have to re-examine where you're going and what happens next. He also looks into a reflection on his own education at the University of Chicago. It's a strong pitch for reading. They have the Great Books program there, and he felt that this gave him a firm, solid base to then explore different parts of his life. And he also undergoes a religious discussion. The word soul, S-O-U-L, is used many times in this book, and he veers on a path moving from Judaism to some type of Christianity. So I think this is a book for people who enjoy reflective studies, people who want to get a grip on what role are they playing in their community today at this moment. And when they get to the second mountain and they reach the pinnacle, do they like the view from the top? So that would be my first recommendation this summer for anybody interested in philosophy, memoir, and I think above all, fitting into the world, which is very much like a quicksands at the moment. The title, The Second Mountain, the author, David Brooks. Now, talking of different people's lives, my second choice is by George Packer. People may know him from The New Yorker. He's a regular essayist there. He's also a playwright, and he has taken as his subject a very controversial character, Richard Holbrook. Holbrook was a U.S. diplomat who really spans the history of from Vietnam down to almost a couple of years ago in Afghanistan and Iraq, and was perhaps, I think, the most controversial of the political advisors to at least three different presidents, to both Jimmy Carter and then again Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, and less to Barack Obama, who really dismissed him. So who was Richard Holbrooke? And that is the question that in this very well-written biography Richard Packer explores. He started his life as an advisor to the Foreign Service in Vietnam in 1963. He was in with the best of them, people like David Halberstam. And I think quickly he saw that there was no way of winning by simply bombing. So he was looking for some type of policy that would go after the minds and hearts. In many ways, Holbrooke was a very, very difficult person to deal with. A strong ego, very narcissistic, and a person who had a hard time believing that his way was the only way and there was no other way. So what George Packer has done is include what I call warts and all. It's a discussion of the nature of Holbrooke's personality. It deals with the various relationships with women, his marriage, but it also deals with his relationship with presidents and the fact that he made very few friends, even though he did have one great success in his life, and that was bringing the war in Bosnia to a conclusion. The Dayton Accords was his pinnacle of success, but after that, sadly for him, it was a downhill mountain. Not the second mountain, the last mountain. And I think what's important to see is when you are driven at the way that Holbrooke was driven, it sometimes had these medical effects. And in fact, he died of a heart attack trying to get into the office when Barack Obama had left strict instructions. He did not want him in. And within a couple of days following that heart attack, he was on his way to hospital, where sadly he died. So if you're interested in a study of American foreign policy over the last 50 years, the story from Vietnam through other engagements, the question about does imperialism work and whose eyes should you see it through, I highly recommend book number 2. It's called Our Man, simply O-U-R-M-A-N, Our Man. And Our Man in this case is indeed Richard Holbrooke. Now, after kind of heady reading like that, you may indeed want to look for something lighter. So here we go. The author, Helen Ellis, the story, Southern Ladies' Code. And this is a deep satirical take on the way the South operates, particularly when it comes to everything from makeup to thank you notes and the whole pitch about what it means to be well-behaved. She's a very witty writer. She certainly has a hand on how the South has operated so well. And you could almost hear that Southern accent coming across in a nice tender way as you want to feel at home back there in the old rocking chair outside a house in Alabama. So she brings all that to the table in a mix. And my last choice for today, and I always like to kind of reread something that brought a smile to my face in times gone by. And this is a novel from the 1920s, actually written in 1922. It's called Enchanted April. It's by Elizabeth von Arnim. And this is a recipe for happiness. Four women, one medieval Italian castle, plenty of wisteria and solitude, and above all, good conversation. Now, if you enjoy the book, I would also recommend considering, in this case, seeing the movie. The movie is the same title, Enchanted April, and it again is a beautifully filmed movie set in Italy in the villa where the actual story took place. It was a bestseller in 1922, but you wouldn't notice the time gap. It could apply today. In fact, in 1922, it started a whole tourist phase for people going to Portofino. It also became a Broadway play. And Michael Kitchen in the movie plays the beautifully well-mannered host who would enter any villa and make you feel at home. So those are four choices coming up for this summer. First, the David Brooks book, it's called The Second Mountain. Second, George Packer, it's called Our Man, The Story of Richard Holbrooke. And then two light-hearted reads. First of all, The Southern Lady's Code, How to Behave in the South, and a revival of an old book, which I highly recommend, Enchanted April by Elizabeth Bon Annam. And there you have it, Kevin. If you're still with us, say hello.
Oh, I've been enjoying this. I want to find all these books, and they're well in print. You can find them in bookstores, or you can order them from your favorite independent bookstores as well.
Yeah, so let's hear it for bookstores. In fact, let's keep bookstores alive and in business.
Fantastic, Peter. We'll see you again very soon. It's Open Air, San Francisco Arts Magazine, heard here on KALW San Francisco. My name is Kevin Vance, sitting in for David LaTulipe today. In just a moment, we'll go to the BBC NewsHour. Coming up next week on Open Air, we'll hear from Christian Reif. He is leading the San Francisco Symphony Youth Orchestra and music of Mahler and Tchaikovsky. We'll also hear from Suzanne Grodner, who is touring in the production of Beautiful, the musical devoted to the work and music of Carole King. Jacob Garchik will be here. He's working with the Kronos Festival of 2019, and he has a new piece that he's composed that he wants to share with everyone. And we'll also hear from members of Pocket Opera. They're putting on a production of Offenbach's Tales of Hoffman. You can find more about today's show, plus a podcast, at KALW.org. This program produced by Neil Swinkles, and David LaTulipe will be back in the chair this time next week.